Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Off and running into 2016. Thanks for being with us. Good Monday. We will have Paula Bovin, news and notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. She will join us via Skype here in about 15 minutes, a little bit earlier than usual. Eric is here. He is back from the TCU Oregon game. And so Paula's deal is what? She's got some conference calls, something that's more important than being on with us. What's the, you know, we have a partnership with AZ Central. So I expect Paula at 10:35 and you say she doesn't want to do it.
I've tried not to ask too many questions after 2 weeks ago. She said, can we bump the segment back? I'm drying my hair.
She actually said that?
She did.
Wow.
She did. Because it was a double.
Did we tell when we were Skyping?
It was a double segment that we used not only on the stream show, but also on the TV show. Mm-hmm. So she wanted to make sure that she looked her best.
Yeah. So she was drying her hair and she couldn't be on.
I don't know what the deal is today. She just said, hey, we need to do a little earlier. I got some conference call or something. So whatever. It's fine.
We're flexible. I have my hair for the TV show every day, right? It's the way it goes. Didn't deliver it.
I'm looking.
I know. Did you have a good New Year?
Yeah.
Yeah. You were in San Antonio.
I had a great January 2nd.
You know, I'm going to get to that in a minute. So Paula will be with us at 10:20, and then Chris Cartman's going to be in studio because I did not have a good January 2nd. I was at Chase Field, and I was actually – it's funny with Eric. Eric is an enormous TCU fan, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's very supportive. I'm wearing purple today in support of you. Because I sent Eric a little note saying you can still catch a flight home when it was 28-0. And he sent me back a very snarky, typical, you would take a cheap shot like that. And I was like, oh, I thought we were friends.
No, wow. It's typical. It's very typical.
Yeah, it was below the belt.
It's funny because TCU has won, 23 of their last 26 games?
Here we go.
Yet the one bad half they have, I hear from you. It's typical, though. It is. I see the way you handle your business around here with all the other sports fans here at Skyview.
Did you see or hear from me at all about your quarterback being arrested on the Riverwalk? And the answer would be no.
Yes. I talked to you Wednesday, and you did bring it up.
I brought it up.
Okay.
But it wasn't anything in
you,
terms of
but
a cheap
I
shot.
Didn't bring it up. You brought it up.
Hey, it's too bad your quarterback got arrested on the Riverwalk. And I think the conversation was something like, yeah, I can't refund this ticket.
Correct.
I think there was something like that. So for full disclosure, not that we're going to give away everything that we talk about in our phone calls.
They're long. I mean, it'd take a while to recap all those.
Sometimes they're
really
long.
That's what happens, you know?
Yeah.
It's okay.
So New Year's, like the bowl games were not great.
That's saying it nicely.
Yeah, they blew. And the Cardinals game yesterday, the good thing about the Cardinals game yesterday was it was over very early so that I could go do and move on with my life. I'm one of those people that I don't have to sit there in real time. I do. It's part of what I do. But all of us in this day and age of technology, and we're going to get into technology and Robert Sarver in a minute because he said some things this morning about millennials being the problem and like, really? Okay, this is interesting because I kind of agree with some of the stuff he said, but not everything. I mean, I didn't give up 142 to Sacramento. I don't know if that's millennials' fault. I didn't have 21 straight possessions where we couldn't get a stop. It's me. But the Cardinal game yesterday, so in all seriousness, everybody is wanting to say, oh, my gosh, what a horrible showing by the Cardinals yesterday. And it was, okay? Let's not sit here and sugarcoat this. And the easy thing for anybody who's a Cardinal fan to say is, well, it was just one game. This is a veteran team, and the game didn't really matter that much anyways, and they're going to be just fine. And I kind of go along with that narrative. However, you're only as good as your last game that you've played. And if you believe that your team has an on-off switch and that all of a sudden things will just turn right around no matter who you play, I think that's a little naive too. There's somewhere in the middle there because you just don't roll out of an NFL game. I don't know. New England didn't play well yesterday. Denver, the Peyton Manning story is now the story of the postseason nationally. It's not the Arizona Cardinals. Okay, it is Peyton Manning. Whether you're sick of Peyton Manning, and a lot of you are sick of Peyton Manning. For Peyton Manning to do what he did yesterday, I was over watching that because it was being shown locally. And I was over there early, like second quarter early. It's like, okay, this is over. Click, I'm out. I'm not going to sit here and try to break down a game where I don't think they were really that intense, obviously. And Seattle was really that good. But, you know, here's so yesterday, Russell Wilson comes out. And Russell Wilson has played as well as any quarterback in the NFL, supposedly. Last week we had Warren Moon on, and Warren Moon said point blank, Russell Wilson has been as good as any quarterback in the NFL and has been as good as any quarterback in the history for this stretch in the last 5-6 weeks, which I thought was overstating it. But Russell Wilson yesterday tore apart the Arizona Cardinals in every way, every shape, and every form. There's no denying that. We all saw it. The Seahawks clobbered the Cardinals, kicked them across the field, right ways, left ways. But the only upside yesterday for the Cardinals was maybe Dwight Freeney got another $100,000 in his stocking because he got another sack. The very first play for the Cardinals on offense, Carson Palmer got smoked. He got smoked low and he got smoked high. From that point on, it was like, okay, should they really have him out there? And we debated this, and I was in agreement with Bruce Arians in playing the guys at least part of the game. It's a rhythm league. But even that said, the rhythm yesterday was not there. And for Seattle, you know, Richard Sherman, I'm going to talk to Paul about Richard Sherman a little bit later because she spoke with him after the game. And he said, yeah, the Cardinals should be scared of us. We've been saying the last few weeks, if there's a team that you don't want to play in the playoffs, for whatever reason with Pete Carroll, they don't look very good in September. And they kind of figure it out sort of by late October. And by the end of the year, they're peaking at the right time. I felt the same thing about the Cardinals coming into the game yesterday. Obviously, a gigantic lead balloon. No other way to put it. And if they go out and they take care of Green Bay or Minnesota or Washington here at home, I don't think they want any part of Seattle again. It's like, I don't think the Cardinals fear going to Carolina at all. If they have to go to Carolina to go play in the Super Bowl, I don't think that's a problem for them. They got to play Seattle again here. Man, that was a statement yesterday. You may not think it was a statement. You may try and sugarcoat it and say it was a meaningless August preseason who cares game. It wasn't. It wasn't. You know, the minute Corey Redding goes down with a knee, they going low on his knee, and the message was sent by Seattle. We are here to beat you up. And so it will be interesting here over the next 2 weeks. We're going to analyze this left ways, right ways of whether or not the Cardinals are a team that is going to be able to shake this off, whether this was just a blip in the screen, whether this was just a way for them to go through the wake-up call, that there's enough veteran leadership on this team. Please give me Carson Palmer's record when it comes to the playoffs. Exactly. Okay. So you don't know that. You can give me Larry Fitzgerald's record in the postseason. You can give me Dwight Freeney's record in the postseason. The Cardinals have some players that have been there. Okay, I understand that. But as I've written and as I've said, up until the Green Bay game, the Cardinals hadn't played, in my opinion, a complete game. And maybe now seeing Green Bay and all their warts, and there's a lot of warts there with the Packers, that they still haven't really put it all together. The caliber of the Packers is not that great. Come postseason, like, I hope Carolina gets smacked across the head. When I see Carolina celebrate like they celebrate and do some of the things they're doing, I don't buy into that. That's a millennial thing, or that's just a cultural thing. It's a disrespect thing. Show up, act like you've been there. You don't need to tell me how good you are. You don't need to pose for photos. You don't need to pose after a 5-yard gain in the second quarter that gets you across midfield. Entirely too much of that nonsense out of that team. So we'll talk with Paula in a few minutes about her conversation with Richard Sherman and where she sees it. Arizona State, it's not good. Once again, I ran into somebody who's a big cigar yesterday at the ASU-U of A game. And this big cigar has been a big cigar around ASU football for a long time. And this person said to me, did you see the point spread? And he didn't want to talk about the result of the game. And there are people out there that just are okay with a 7-loss season Do you hear yourselves? 7-loss season. Your recruiting coordinator quit after the game. He was leaving anyways to go be with Mike Norvell, but he said, I'm done. So today is January 4th. A month from today, February 4th, the biggest day of the year in college football. It's letter of intent day. All the new talent is coming in. And so 30 days before letter of intent day, you lose your recruiting coordinator. That's not good. Doesn't matter how you spin it or try to spin it. It's never good. And some of the stuff that went on during the ASU football game, if I'm being nice, and because it's Monday, it's the start of a new year, and I keep telling myself I'm going to be a nicer person. Do you want me to be nicer this year? Is okay?
To me or just in general?
To you.
No.
Okay. So to the audience, should I be nicer? To some of these teams, should I be nicer?
No.
Okay, the Suns are great. They're brilliant. They've got it all figured out. They're being nice. It's great that the Sun Devils came so close. They were leading in every game in the fourth quarter. They're really a good team. It doesn't matter they lost 7.
Now you're just lying.
No, that right. So I'm not, I can't do that. When you have to take a timeout on a kickoff, I've never seen that. Ever. When you don't go for 2 and you lead by 5 and it's late in the game, I don't know where to go with this.
Is that a bad loss, though, for ASU when you think about it? West Virginia is not a bad team. I understand ASU did some things that are head scratchers.
Let's be serious here, okay? I'm not disrespecting you, but you were enjoying the biggest comeback in TCU history.
Yes.
So you didn't see
I've seen a lot of West Virginia, and they have talent. It's not like ASU lost a home game to UTEP.
But go back and look at Jordy's story.
Okay.
Jordan Hamm's story. He's got video. I mean, there's nobody around these receivers. Like, nobody. It's not just one or two pictures.
Yeah, I saw
the
some of it.
The secondary of ASU was horrible. So.
Skylar Howard threw for like 500-some-odd yards.
He's average.
He's very average.
Very average.
And this Burko threw for like 400-some-odd yards. So,
First and goal on the 1 out of the gun, second quarter. Field goal.
No excuse.
Field goal.
It's just
all right. Paula Bovin's next. I'm just going to lose my mind here. I'm not going to make it to 2016. Some of the stuff I saw to finish or start the year. Paula's next. Then Chris Cartman's going to be in studio to talk about some of this stuff from SunDevilSource.com. But Paula Bovin on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. With Paula Bovin, week in, week out, my friend, AZ Central sports columnist. She joins us via Skype. A concern about the Cardinals and what happened on Sunday. You spoke with Richard Sherman after the game. He made it sound like the Cardinals don't want to see Seattle again. Let's start with the first part of this. Are you concerned about the Cardinals moving forward with what they did on or didn't do on Sunday?
I think so. I mean, I am, as just someone watching this team. I've been so impressed with them all season. This is the first time I felt that this way. And I can understand, you know, that there wasn't a lot to play for and they didn't play a lot of their starters the second half. I get all that. I think the scary part is just how good Seattle is looking and that they might face this team in the conference championship. That's a worrisome part, more than just the Cardinals and how they played.
Okay, and they didn't play their starters in the second half because they were getting their doors blown off. So when it was head-to-head, from the very first play from scrimmage, Carson Palmer got popped high and low on the very first pass attempt. It looked to me like Seattle was up on the Cardinals in every way, shape, and form, and you spoke with Richard Sherman after the game, and he had some interesting comments, right?
He did, and let me preface this by saying I was the one who asked him the question. I said something to the effect of, Richard, I think some Cardinals fans are concerned they may have to play you guys again. What's your take again on a possible meeting? And he just answered it with, they should be concerned. And then he launched, without any really being provoked at all, this whole, you know, John Brown situation, that John Brown made this sort of obscure comment in August on a radio station, and suddenly somehow Richard Sherman hears it. That's, you know, Brown is saying, sure, I could, you know, go one-on-one with him or something along that line. Sherman like reads this stuff, remembers it, and holds grudges. It just cracks me up for someone as talented as this guy is. So this team is very much into beating the Cardinals. That was a message I got out of that post-game press conference.
Okay,
no question.
So they don't play for another till a week from Saturday. We don't know if it's going to be Green Bay, Minnesota, or Washington. I think the overriding question is, this team is giving the perception that, you know, it's one game, we can get it figured out. That they sound to me like they've got an on-off switch. Like, well, we were just off that day.
Right.
And I don't see that working in January very well. So am I on the right path here from what you're getting from the Cardinals?
Well, I mean, for me, the bottom line, and I kind of, this is how I approach life. You sort of judge people on their body of work. And I feel the same way with the Cardinals. You know, I'm not going to let one game sort of shape how I think they'll do in the postseason. And I think during the course of the season, toward the end, they're probably the best team in the NFL. But, you know, why you also have to wonder why professional athletes can't turn it up a notch. You know, Arians has said he saw some things in practice this week. I don't really remember hearing that reported, but maybe he saw some things other people didn't. But, you know, why are you not practicing as well? Because there were things that were still on the line at some point during the game. We didn't know the Carolina outcome yet. So I think it's worrisome. I don't think it's, you know, fans should panic, because I do still think the Cardinals are maybe certainly the best team in the NFC right now. But I think Seattle is awfully close. And that's what's intriguing to me.
Well, and so I'll go back a little bit and disagree with you here. So Green Bay comes in here, and I thought it was the most complete performance by the Cardinals this season. But Green Bay is not very good now. It's right. Just very straightforward to me. In even the weeks leading up, didn't matter if it's the Minnesota game, the St. Louis game, there were things that the Cardinals were doing in the way of dropping passes that I saw once again out of Michael Floyd yesterday, by example. And there is this tendency that put it all together and nobody can touch them. The Green Bay game, perfect example of that. But the Packers aren't that good. So I don't know. I mean, I really don't know how good this team is. Regular season means one thing, postseason another.
Well, no, it's true. And, you know, you learn a lot about your team during the course of the season, but you learn a whole lot more different things in the postseason. And some of these guys are, you know, facing situations they've never faced before. Such a high-profile game of being the, you know, the hunted instead of going and trying to hunt other people down. I mean, there are new situations this team is facing, but I'm not dramatically concerned about that. I really do believe if you look at the course of their season, save this game and a few other blips, I mean, they were playing so well and they were putting it all together, as you said. And so I think that's more of who they are. Just, you know, they have to be careful, especially if it comes down to a meeting with Seattle in the conference championship.
Okay, let's move over then to, I want to talk big picture about the bowl games. I saw you at the Fiesta Bowl. There were empty seats. Parking was a disaster. You have two marquee programs in Ohio State and Notre Dame. The Fiesta Bowl doesn't feel, and you alluded to this in your column in AZ Central and in the Arizona Republic, the Fiesta Bowl doesn't feel like it once did. It doesn't mean it's going away anytime soon. They'll have the semifinals here next year. But the whole bowl season, I think they got it wrong with playing these two semifinal games on New Year's Eve. I didn't watch all the way through. I would like to see the technology numbers, not just the TV ratings. You know, show me how many people are watching online before I can make a judgment that it was a failure. What about you and how this went about over the weekend, the semifinal games being on New Year's Eve?
Yeah, I did not like it at all. And, you know, this is what I think sometimes happens in college football, and the arrogance of all the conference commissioners. They think whatever they do, whatever they declare is going to work. But you can't expect that New Year's Eve situation to be a healthy one. And part of the problem is they're going to get their money whatever happens with the ratings, because these contracts are set. But I think they have to reevaluate, and maybe these numbers, I know they have a contract for what, 12 years or something, but two out of every 3 years, the situation's going to happen. I think they have to reevaluate this New Year's Eve thing. And the whole Fiesta Bowl thing, I understand part of the reason I think it feels different probably is because the Fiesta Bowl doesn't have a lot of control over what it used to now that the contracts have changed. ESPN comes in, negotiates contracts for sponsorships and this and that. And certainly over the last few years, the Fiesta Bowl has had to change their ways for good reason, you know, after they were doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. But it wasn't even on them to me. I mean, it felt different. It was just the way they determined the, you know, 11 a.m. kickoff, right, and the date of the game, and already having the two games that actually matter beforehand. I mean, all that stuff was just weird to me. And so I'm not happy with this system at all right now.
Arizona State, Paula, this is a real interesting time for Todd Graham. They had a 7-loss season. Seven. Right. And the game on Saturday night, I was there for half of it. I decided I wanted to get home for at least 20 minutes of sleep before going to the U of A ASU basketball game the next day. Game didn't end until after midnight, but Chip Long leaves, so the recruiting coordinator is out 30 days before National Letter of Intent Day. Todd looked like on the sidelines during the game that he and Coach Slocum just were going to go to Rock'em Sock'em Robots. I think there's real problems going on over there. I don't care who wants to try to sugarcoat it that there's not. What do you see?
This is the first time, I think it's in the Graham era, that I felt for fans concerned about the program. I just think there's too many warning signs. There's what you talked about. There's the defections to Memphis. And I, you know, coaches change, but they got a new offensive coordinator. You know, they had the situation with Bo Graham leaving, which I think upset their season a little bit. It doesn't feel the way it's felt over the last past years that Graham has been here. Now, should fans be widespread panic? Of course not. But I think this program and Graham, they all need to do a little soul searching about kind of what happened. I mean, even in that game and the performance and their inability to, you know, sustain drives and all those other things that were happening, the program just doesn't feel as healthy as it's been. And I haven't said that under Graham. I've been a big proponent of the things he's done, the discipline, you know, all those 10 victory seasons. He's done a lot. I think he came at the right time. But now I think is his biggest test with fans and even media, who we haven't been that hard on him. I think the questions are going to be more frequent and probably a little tougher here in the offseason.
Okay, I've got to disagree with you, though, on this. Why shouldn't fans be concerned? Why?
Well, no, I think they should be concerned, but I don't think they should panic. Again,
why
it goes
not?
To what that,
why not?
Because that issue I told you earlier, Brad, I think you have to judge people on their body of work, and you can't forget everything that Graham accomplished.
Seven
in the thing.
Losses.
Yeah,
seven.
But seven losses is one season. Yeah, you worry. I think they have soul searching to do, but I don't see you say, you know, I'm getting all those fire the coach emails, which I think is ridiculous. I mean, you know, one season, you don't react that way.
I don't think that he... I don't think removing him now, because I don't see a better option out there. And please don't send me Chip Kelly. And I'm sure you're getting a lot of that stuff, too.
Sure.
But, you know, Todd has come in here and took over the program when it had bottomed out under Dennis and everybody felt good about it. And the stadium project's moving forward and Ray is here now. Ray's got to be looking at Todd even and saying, how do we lose seven games? And I'm going to get a whole lot here in the offseason about, well, we led every game in the fourth quarter. Good teams find ways to win. Bad teams find ways to lose. Plain and simple. So let's not try to sugarcoat this. And I think a hammer to the program is very appropriate right now.
Well, I mean, they need to answer the tough questions. And Brad, I'm going to jump off after this. I need to jump on a conference call. But, you know, I think they need to know why their offense was so broken. Is a new offensive coordinator going to change that? You know, are they going to have some continuity again on that coaching staff? And you're right. I mean, there are a lot of games that they were supposed to win that didn't, games that should have been closer that weren't. They need to answer the tough questions in the offseason. But I do not agree with people who are already saying, let's fire Todd Graham.
There's Paula Bovin. She's got to get on that conference call. Maybe it's Todd Graham. I don't know. But I appreciate you coming on board. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
There's Paula Bovin, AZ Central sports columnist. Chris Cartman's going to be in studio in about 10 minutes from sundevilsource.com. Because we've done a lot around the Cardinals today, and we've got 2 weeks of this now. We're in this space where it's great to have a bye and it's great to sit back and to try to figure out the matchups and all that stuff. And they weren't good at all yesterday. But I do want to work in Robert Sarver. I'm going to do that after this timeout. And a few other things that are on my mind on today's show. The Pac-12 over the weekend, I voted for McCaffrey for Heisman, but nobody in the East Coast wants to give him any credit at all. And I want to talk about next year's Heisman because it's really intriguing. There's three names already. They're just heavyweights. All that straight ahead, sports360az.com. That's our website. We have plenty of content up on sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at sports360az.
So part of the Cardinals getting destroyed yesterday, their schedule is now set for next year. We just don't know the dates of the teams that they'll play, but the teams that they will play for sure next year at home will be New England, the Jets, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, and Washington. Those teams will be coming here next year, along with the teams from the NFC West. So you'll see San Francisco, Seattle, and St. Louis, wherever they're playing. Could be Los Angeles. Could be Oakland. I don't know. It's all over the place. They will travel to Buffalo, Miami, Atlanta, Carolina, Minnesota. So the road games against the Bills, the Dolphins, the Falcons, the Panthers, and Minnesota. So, you know, on the surface, even though they got their butts kicked yesterday and just completely cleaned across every way, shape, and form, that's a pretty good schedule for 2016. You get Tom Brady here. You get Todd Bowles coming here, too. The Jets are going to be here. The Saints, they may part ways with Sean Payton. They're talking about a draft pick for Sean Payton, a second-round pick. But the Saints are coming here next year. Tampa Bay comes here, which means Jameis Winston. And Washington will be here, a playoff team, a team that I think is ascending. You have to go to Buffalo. If that game is like December 20th, good luck with that. They go to Miami. That's not bad. I think the Dolphins are a train wreck. They go to Atlanta. I don't think Atlanta's any great shakes. They go to Carolina. Yeah, it's a very good team. And they go to Minnesota. They could have some games late in the year. Like some of these games you look at and say the Jets and Cardinals on Monday Night Football, that's too thick. Or Sunday Night Football even. You have Todd Bowles. The Jets almost made the playoffs. It's New York. You have this little team out here in Arizona that's pretty darn good. So there's some games of interest next year for them. That's not an easy schedule. There are not too many speed bumps there for the Cardinals next year. So that's on my mind. I want to circle back on something. We'll have Chris Cartman here in about 5 minutes talking about ASU's train wreck. They lost another coach this morning to Memphis. And if you're not concerned and you're an ASU fan, then you're just not really that into it. This is not good. This is not good in any way, shape, or form. You're 30 days away from letter of intent day, and you lose your recruiting coordinator. And so there's some other things I want to get into with Chris in a bit. On a bigger scale, though, so the Pac-12, and how did they look in the postseason? How did they look in the bowl season? And I would say if you went through it game by game and how they performed, they were favored in every one of the bowl games. The Pac-12 teams were favored in every one of the bowl games. And they lost three of them. And if you go by the wise guys in Vegas, they should have looked better than that. Stanford easily. Stanford, you can make the argument, was an 8-point North Carolina swing away from knocking off Clemson to being in the national picture, to being in the playoff. They were that close, and they're that good. And McCaffrey, I voted for him for Heisman, and he didn't have a shot because he's not from anywhere near the East Coast. So, of course, when this week finishes up and Alabama and Clemson come to town, it's a whole different breed of football fan and media and coverage than what we see out here in the West. I still believe that there's enough interest and passion that as time has gone by, things have changed. That this can be, and I'm not going to say exactly like the SEC, but this is no longer the little laid back, we'll just pay attention to college when they're playing somebody that's kind of sort of maybe interesting. Eric, would you agree with me on that or not?
I would.
We started this 4 years ago, and part of our vision was the college football landscape was completely underappreciated and undercovered. You know, guys like Chris have done a great job on their platform, and they're going to continue to thrive and grow. Jason Jewell is part of that platform as well. But by and large, the Pac-12 does not have a whole lot of meat and teeth and of people covering it. There really is like a handful of people you look at and say, that guy knows what's going on, that guy knows what's going on, and that guy knows what's going on. There's only a few of them.
In each market, yeah, there's probably, I don't know, like you said, two or three that really dig into it and do a good job on the day-to-day stuff.
Because like you see what's going on around TCU, and I go back to you on the Big 12, and you saw what a big deal that was when you were a student. And now here it is, what, 15, 20, 30, 50 years later for you or something
four
like that?
4 years later, yeah.
Yeah, 4 years later. You're on the 9-year plan?
Yeah, 19-year plan.
But seriously, the interest in Big 12 has now rivaled, I think, in certain pockets, what we see and hear out of the SEC.
I would agree, but
certain pockets.
But the Big 12 is under the microscope for their underperforming bowl season. They went 3-4, and in reality, they easily could have gone 1-6.
See, and I think the Pac-12's underperformed in the bowl season, too. I mean, I really do. U of A had to hang on to beat New Mexico. I'm not going to go through each and every bowl game, but USC didn't look good.
No.
UCLA didn't look good. Okay.
Cal played Air Force. They should beat Air Force. They beat Air Force.
Yeah. And they lose their quarterback. I think the Heisman side of it. So next year, Deshaun Watson's coming back. Fournette's coming back. McCaffrey's back. You talk about heavyweight of heavyweight Heisman trophies. It's the last few years, it's been kind of, And we know that there's going to be another name or two that will emerge that we haven't heard about. But those three are going to be back. That's terrific stuff. Robert Sarver, and then I'll get over to Chris Cartman. Robert Sarver told the Arizona Republic this morning, quote, "The blame is to be shared from the top down." Okay, that's simple. Here's the interesting part of this. Robert Sarver said to Paul Coro that social media and young players' struggles and attitude connection are common to all millennials may be the problem. I didn't know this. So let me get this straight. When the Suns went through 21 straight possessions where Sacramento scored a basket in their game on Saturday, it's because they were millennials. Who knew? Quote, "I'm not sure it's just the NBA," Robert Sarver tells the Arizona Republic today. "My whole view of the millennial culture is that they have a tough time dealing with setbacks. And Markieff Morris is the perfect example." So he calls out one of his own guys. "He had a setback with his brother in the offseason. He just can't seem to recover from it. I'm not sure if it's the technology," quoting Robert Sarver, "or the instant gratification of being online. But the other thing is, I'm not a fan of social media. I tell my kids it's like fantasy land. The only thing people put up online are good things that happen to them." I guess he's on the wrong message board. "Or things that they make up. And it creates unrealistic expectations. We've had a number of setbacks this year that have taken their toll on us. And we haven't been resilient. Therefore, it's up to our entire organization to step up their game." So this is the problem. This isn't going away. This is where it's all going. So you may not want your kids to be on it, which is fine. That's a parental choice. But that has nothing to do with owning the franchise that is in the ditch for six straight years. Nothing. Other than agents can tweet your guy and say, you should have played more. You should have shot more. Yeah, that goes on. That goes on with high school. That goes on with college. Yeah, there are all these people that can now text somebody after game saying, you got screwed. Joey Bosa got screwed the other day, I thought, in the Fiesta Bowl. And I'm sure there were 20 agents, even though he's probably already agreed to one, that texted him before he even got off the field, said, you got screwed. Hey, let's talk. It's part of the deal. Chris Cartman is next, sundevilsource.com. Best insider that's going on there with sundevilsource.com. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Been looking forward to talking to Chris Cartman since, about halfway through Saturday night when I saw Chris at the press box at Chase Field for the ASU West Virginia disaster. We'll get to that in a minute, though. I want to start with, I saw you yesterday, ASU, U of A, and Bobby Hurley gets thrown. Was it Bobby Hurley saying to his team and the fans, hey, wake up, you know, I'm not Herb Sendek, I am not Rob Evans, I am not any of these guys, I'm Bobby Hurley, or... And the refs, I thought he was trying to get teed up early in the game. He was trying really hard, right?
First half, yeah.
Yeah, and they wouldn't do it. It was right. Just like, you're going to sit here and you're going to take it. This is your first conference game. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Okay, what was your view of Hurley yesterday?
Well, the technical he got the first one, 74 seconds left, ASU down 6. They had cut it from 16 to 6. That was too early. You couldn't get it in that situation. I think the second one he definitely wanted to get thrown out of the game. It was a statement to the fans, probably also to his team of his support. I think what the big takeaway, though, is that he's this intoxicating figure that people are like now wanting to look at, and they're people are focused on him. I think there's a reverence with the great coaches out there, and that's college basketball, whether you look at Bobby Knight or John Calipari,
Coach K,
Rick Pitino. That's, you know, there's something about them that really grabs your attention, your focus. ASU needs that in basketball. Mm-hmm. Herb Sendek got ejected in a similar way in a game and did the same action to the crowd, but it didn't didn't feel as natural. He was intense, but Bobby Hurley, there's a simmering sort of thing underneath the surface with him that just is palpable almost. And I think that's what ASU basketball needs, similar to what ASU football needed when Todd Grant came in, his energy, the type of personality that he is. If anything's going to get ASU over the hump, it's going to be that sort of a figure.
I was impressed. I mean, look, he doesn't have the deepest of teams by any stretch of the imagination. They were outmanned in a lot of spaces yesterday, especially inside. But I think in a period of time, Chris, he's had some nice wins in the preseason. And I'm interested to see how much progress, how much they close the gap the next time these two teams play in Tucson. He could lose by 40 down there. Yeah. And that happens to a lot of ASU coaches. Yeah. And Sean's team, to me, looks like a team that, on the surface, people said, well, they didn't play the toughest non-conference. They don't have all these star players. They really aren't that good. I disagree. I think he's got a team that, if Kadeem Allen keeps rising, he's the difference maker on that squad.
Well, Arizona defends. They have great length. Mm-hmm. So they're always going to be there. You know, maybe their point guard play has been a little bit sporadic here and there. But I like their whole composition. For ASU, I just see so much improvement across the roster with some of these role guys. Willie Atwood, for example, was nothing a year ago. He's maybe the Pac-12's most improved player. Trey Holder's made a dramatic jump in his game.
Cody Justice
looks so much better. Jerry Blakes was initiating the offense yesterday. Mm-hmm. Guys like playing for Hurley because there's a freedom associated with that. He knows as long as you're giving great effort, they're going to be able to just go out there and play their game. And the game was a very fun game to watch. Low fouls, low turnovers, 50% shooting or more from the teams for most of the game, higher scoring. It was a fun thing. I think it's going to inject some excitement into this rivalry because Sean Miller also is that type of intense coach.
All right. Chris Cartman with us for a couple of minutes. Sun Devil Source. Chris Cartman with us for a couple of minutes, sundevilsource.com, insider around Arizona State football, to visit further about what happened over the weekend and coaches leaving. We're now less than 30 days until National Letter of Intent Day. ASU loses their recruiting coordinator. ASU loses Chris Ball. Mike Norvell leaves. 7-loss season. Let's start with recruiting first and foremost, because you follow that inside and out. How big of a loss is it to lose your recruiting coordinator a month before Letter of Intent Day?
So one of the positives here is that Todd Graham did a great job of convincing ASU that they needed to have a new position created for assistant athletic director for recruiting, Patrick Suttis. This was early in 2014. Mm-hmm. Now, Suttis has done a great job. The social media component of recruiting and how many facets there are involved in this.
Nick Saban guy, Patrick Suttis.
Yeah, originally. And then Texas for a year. I mean, so he's knocked it out of the park. He's absorbed a lot of the responsibilities that the recruiting coordinator previously had. So in that regard, it's not as big of a hit. Now Chip Long is one of their best recruiters, young, energetic, works really hard. He's in a lot of different markets around the country. He's been big in Southern California, Arizona, back east. So that's a major thing, especially coupled with Norvell, who's also one of their young, aggressive type of recruiters. Turning that over, there's a lot of challenges associated with that, obviously. And in particular, because those were probably the two biggest recruiters in the state, and they hadn't had a lot of success until this year. It just started to get turned around. Mm-hmm. Of course, at Chandler High School, some of these offensive linemen that ASU's landed also in the last year. So big overhaul. Chris Ball, fortunately for ASU, they got two junior mid-year defensive backs who have already signed with the program, and they're going to be enrolling here in the next week. That eases that to some degree. But any time that you have this level of turnover in your coaching staff, coupled with an underperforming season, it creates a lot of problems. Then, as you know, Brad, they have a new quarterback and four new offensive linemen. There's a lot of things that are going on right now.
Okay, and we'll one other recruiting note. Byron Murphy this weekend is supposed to announce. Does the recruiting coordinator leaving have any impact on this? And where do you think Byron Murphy is leaning?
Not really. I think he's been leaning towards ASU. The thinking was, is he going to take an official visit to USC in January? I think that's still borderline whether that's going to happen or not. Before this decision this week, it looks like if it happens during the week, then he won't be visiting USC. I think Washington was still around the edges of the recruitment. Texas A&M was an early big play, but of course someone's had a lot of problems there, and you had the transfer of their quarterback who's from Arizona, Kyle Allen. So I don't think he's going to end up there. I think really it's USC or ASU at this point.
7-loss season. what can you say? We're sitting there watching mistake after mistake, timeout on a kickoff. I've never seen that. Not going for two, coaching decisions, breakdowns, guys running wide open, all this stuff about, well, the extra practices really help out our program. It looks like they didn't practice at all.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat, well, it was West Virginia, they're pretty good. ASU just flat laid an egg, Chris.
There's really no excuse for some of those coaching mistakes that they made. It's so basic to know that you have to go for two in that situation. The timeout made no sense because you have a kicker who's putting the ball out of the end zone every single time. There was no return yards in the game from West Virginia. You take a five-yard penalty, you save your timeout, right? These are basic types of things. Now, Mike Norvell was the coach who dealt with the decision with Todd Graham on the sideline about when we go for two or when we don't go for two. Now, he's not there. Who's really in charge? I know that they said that that Chip Lindsey was a new play caller, but that was sort of ambivalent to some degree, that there was a shared sort of responsibility. I think it got lost there. Of course, ASU's secondary was abysmal in the last five, six games of the season. Quishy Brown was absolutely toasted. I didn't see enough diversity of coverages, enough different approaches to trying to get this sorted out. I thought maybe the bowl practices would enable that, to then play more zone, figure out a way. And I think there's also an indictment to be said about the fact that there was nobody else who was the next man up. I mean, this is 4 years into a program. You should have be developing players.
You're recruiting players, and I hear all about these great recruiting classes, and there was nobody there. All right, so I'm getting this asked of me. You tell me. Should Ray Anderson say to Todd Graham, look, you're the head coach. You're not going to be the defensive coordinator anymore. Go get a DC. Oversee everything that's going on within your program. I'm hearing that. What do you think?
I don't think that's really what it is. I mean, we're talking about, in the big picture, back-to-back 10-win seasons prior to this. Yes, they had a catastrophic breakdown in a lot of ways this year. I think it was, at the end of the day, their transitional year in a lot of respects on the defensive side of the football. When they first got to ASU, they had some pieces. They went really JUCO heavy, and then they kind of maybe didn't get some of the recruits that they needed who were young that they could develop and bring in. They moved some corners to safety because they were trying to just move pieces around to get it all fixed up. It didn't really happen. Now, these problems could still persist. But I like what they've done in recruiting last year and this year in particular, and I think they're going to be able to overcome some of these things. But I will say that other teams in the Pac-12 have adjusted to the style of Todd Graham, and so he's going to need to continue to be ahead of the curve in that regard with his approach.
Is he under the gun?
No, I don't see that at all. I mean, 2016 could be another season where they don't do that well because the new quarterback, all these new starters on offense and defense, it's almost like a reshuffling of the deck. You have all these new coaches, Chip Lindsey. So that's going to be tough. Now,
should he be under the gun?
Well, I would say no, but what I think people are frustrated with is the same thing that they loved about Todd Graham, which is he's a superlative talker, came into the season, this is our best team we've ever had, mm-hmm. Then they lose seven games, and then it becomes, well, do you have a really good pulse for your own team, for your own program, in light of the fact that you thought that this was such a great team? It must be said, of course, that five of those losses in the second half of the season, they led in the fourth quarter of each of those games. And so we're talking about, even though it's a bowl team, first bowl team, coach to go to a bowl in four straight seasons at ASU, they had opportunities there to really win a couple more games that they didn't. But the defense, I mean, just unbelievably
which is
bad.
A sign of a bad team, by the way. Good teams find ways to win close games.
Sure.
Bad teams give them away.
Sure.
And that's what it was here this
Don't
year.
Don't disagree with that at all. And definitely they have a lot of things that they have to get worked out, especially on the back end and the secondary.
It's Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com. All the information. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it.
It's Chris Cartman with us, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on Sports360AZ.com right now. You want to check it out. We have a recruiting roundup. We have Michael Fabiano. For those of you that made it through your fantasy season in one piece, we have stories that are a little bit off the beaten path. That's what we're all about here at Sports360AZ.com. Thanks for being with us.